Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Touchline for ZipSportsMedia.com. I'm your host, Sean Watson. I'm sat alongside esteemed sports journalist, Mirror Online's Aaron Flanagan. And our objective for this podcast is to discuss and debate the hot footballing topics of the week or the month or whenever. As they come to us, we'll debate it. That's the idea of this podcast. So I'm honoured to introduce Aaron Flanagan, sat alongside me. Aaron, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
What inspired you? What sold you this podcast? Was it me? Was it me saying you're an esteemed sports journalist?
Yeah, I don't get that billing very often. Obviously I've known you for some time now. So happy to get involved. I'm passionate about my sport and my football. So yeah, I'm more than happy to talk about the sport.
I think this will be good. I'm hugely passionate about sport, as is Aaron, and it's our goal to offer opinions. You get too much bland media content these days. Very, very objective stuff that you see in the media. That's not our goal on this programme. Our goal is to offer opinions and be very subjective on the issues that matter. The first topic that I want to discuss this week, we are just fresh off an international break coming back into the Premier League season. The first topic I want to discuss is the England performance from Sunday against Slovakia. Sam Allardyce's first game in charge. First of all, Aaron, what did you make of it overall?
It was just same old England, wasn't it? It was just so dull and so dire. I'm not gonna lie. I'm really, really behind the Sam Allardyce appointment. I think he was the best man for the job, the man who was going to come in and radicalise and change everything. And first game, I know he's not had loads of time with the team, but he changed nothing. That was the top and bottom of it. It was boring. England, all right, okay, deserved to win the game. They did enough to win the game. But it just wasn't entertaining, you know, and I kind of feel like Sam Allardyce has already looked like he was losing some of like the morals that made him who he was, in the Premier League. Like, he needs to be this shouty persona on the sideline. He needs to play big, brash, brutal football. And I saw none of that with England. I saw none of that from Sam Allardyce on the sideline. So, to be honest, even though England did deserve to win against, you know, a reasonably tough away, you know, in a reasonably tough away game, yeah, I was a little disappointed, if I'm honest.
Was it the exact same lineup as started the Euros? I think it more or less was, minus Dele Alli.
Yeah, there was similar, the same...
Same 4-3-3.
Same sort of names. I mean, obviously, John Stones started at the back, yeah. But he was in the squad. So it's the same squad. Like, nothing has changed, really. Obviously, the few extras he put in there, like Mikel Antonio, you know, they didn't get a run out. I think Theo Walcott came on late on. But, you know, it's... I mean, to be fair, the squad in itself has all the ability in the world. It just seems to be lacking a little bit of direction. And obviously, and then there's Wayne Rooney, who God was playing like as a holding midfielder and then a left back at one point. And it's just bizarre. And, you know, Sam really, really does need to sort that out.
We'll get on to Rooney in a minute. I just wanted to pick up on the point you made there about the ability side of it. That's always been the case with England. We've always had very, very good players. Yeah. And it's just, in my opinion, a lack of belief and a lack of the ability to get the job done under pressure.
Yeah, no, it's a funny one. Like, obviously, you look at the English Premier League and it doesn't matter what players you put in the English Premier League. You can bring in foreigners from left, right and centre. You know, they come to England, they play the English way and the English style, and it's at fast pace, and there's no other league in the world which can do that. And it baffles me how England can't portray that under any manager, because no manager has been able to do it. I think the only time that, you know, England played it, like, in my memory that I can remember England playing at a decent pace and kind of with the same energy as the Premier League was back in the Euro 96 when it was a home tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably what it was, because it was a home tournament is why they did that. International football is so slow and so dull anyway.
Yeah.
The only way England can win is if they play at the intensity that they do in the Premier League. And, you know, they just don't do that.
Is it a case of people, certain players underperforming in an England shirt? We've not seen the best of Harry Kane in an England shirt, for example.
Maybe. Maybe people do, you know, individuals have got their minds more so on the club performances, you know, which is always disappointing. You want people to be fighting for the country, but you know, there's no reason why it should be that way. I wonder if they maybe see England as a bit of a holiday, which is, I mean, it might not strictly be true, but you know, at the end of the day, they don't perform to the same level that they do in the Premier League, so you have to say it's a consideration.
I don't know.
It's a really, really tricky one. Obviously, we know there's so much more to come. And the squad is quite young. There's a lot of players in there. You look at Kaya Walker, still quite young. John Stones at the back is young. Jack Butland coming through net, young.
Eric Dyer.
Exactly. Danny Rose on the left-hand side. I mean, and that's only the defence. You start moving forward, you get your likes of Dele Alli in there. You know, there's a young squad there. There's a squad coming through and a squad with potential. You know, so there's no reason why they can't. You know, if they stick together and, you know, say the intensity improves, there's no reason why it can't be a successful team in the future. But as I say, from the game against Slovakia, just didn't give us much to get excited about.
Well, yeah, after the disappointing Euros, I think probably Sam was looking for a big emphatic performance, mark the new era, get the confidence back up among the supporters, and that just didn't happen at all. Picking up on your Rooney point from before, first of all, what do you think Rooney's best position is? Because this can be debated until the end of time. Nobody really knows. What's your opinion?
For me, Wayne Rooney's been a goal scorer his whole career. He's a striker. I understand that, yes, he's got the technical ability to play in a number 10 role. But it's such a tricky one. And it doesn't help that he's been played in a different position 1 week with United to the next. You know, he plays in a variety of different roles. And it also doesn't help that, you know, he then goes and plays in a completely different role with England. You know, there needs to be some kind of communication. He needs to play in one role. We know he can do a job in every position, but for me, he's been about scoring goals in his career.
Yeah.
That's why he's one of United's leading top goal scorers of all time now. I think he's close to getting closer and closer to Bobby Charlton's record.
He's done it.
Oh, is he past it now?
Yes.
There you go. And then...
For United. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, he did the obviously did the England one last year.
Yeah.
The United one. Yeah, he's a couple of goals short of that.
Yeah. So I mean, that just says everything about him. He's a goal scorer. So why are you not playing him up front? Okay, he's maybe not got the mobility that he used to have, but a lot of strikers don't have much mobility. Sorry. And you know, for me, he needs to play as a striker. But saying that, if you look slightly at United, I don't know whether he would get in the current United team as a striker.
No.
But for me, that's his best position, not this defensive midfield role that he got. You know, it was like a roaming role, playmaker role.
It was a play wherever you want role.
Yeah, but I found him like getting in the way of Eric Dyer at sometimes, you know, because he was dropping that deep. He was trying to play his role, you know, getting on the ball and, you know, breaking up play, you know, and moving the ball about. And he just... It just looked a mess. It's something Allardyce has got to look at. If he really wants to keep on playing Rooney, he needs to find him a solid position, because that just did not work.
What did you make of Allardyce's comments about not being able to tell Wayne Rooney where to play? That was interesting. I didn't really understand what he said there. He's the manager. Surely you can tell him where to play.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because obviously Allardyce isn't really known for weak management, but it sounds a little weak.
It sounds like Rooney's running this team, Allardyce is new to the side.
Yeah.
I'll play where I want, and it doesn't really matter what you think.
Yeah, in a weird way, it almost feels like someone from maybe the top of the FA has said, no, we've got to keep on playing Wayne Rooney, and Allardyce is just going, oh, right, okay, go on, you know, do what you want, Wayne, and it just doesn't resonate well. For me, Wayne Rooney is droppable. A lot of people say, he is not droppable. He has to be droppable.
Every player is droppable.
Yeah. Especially at this stage of his career. How you can have a player who is guaranteed to start when, let's be honest, he's not been that effective for England in 2 years.
Yeah. And in any major tournament since Euro 2004.
Exactly. He has to be droppable. And I think Sam Allardyce has to bite the bullet, and I think he's going to have to play a couple of England teams without Wayne Rooney and see how we get on. If it doesn't work, then fine, put him back in. But
is the selection of Rooney hampering the progression of this team? Because surely a player better suited to a striker role or a holding midfielder holding midfield role could be better suited to this team and allow it to flow a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I was on one of the radio stations in Liverpool just before the Euros, and they were asking, what's your starting 11 for England at the Euros? And I couldn't put Wayne Rooney in it. And that's obviously with the quality in plays that we've got coming through. But I just feel like we need to nurture a younger team. So by continuing to play Rooney, yes, we are hampering, you know, the development of the team. At the end of the day, if he isn't adding, I mean, there might be something which we are completely missing that only these top-level managers know about.
Yeah, those commoners won't actually see it.
Yeah, obviously a lot goes on in training, a lot goes on in the dressing room. We might have missed something. Why does everybody play him? There's got to be a reason why everybody plays him. But from the outset, it does look like he is having a serious impact on the development of the team.
Something slightly a bit more humorous, this, but I've heard in the past couple of days that Rooney's actually going to be rated 87 on the new FIFA. A progression Jesus. From 85 from this year. So if the season has had marks of progression, I don't know if he's got a contract with EA Sports to guarantee him a good rating every year. But
is that the Jose Mourinho effect? They're just assuming that he's going to turn into a world. I mean, 85 is generous anyway.
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, look, we're not slagging Wayne Rooney here. We are a bit, but he's been a great player. Is his time up? I don't know. Will he still be coming in the England team? I'm not sure. But for me, Rooney's absolutely droppable. And I think dropping him would be healthy for the England team.
It might be healthy for him as well, because as soon as he gets dropped for a little bit, he knows he's got to up his game again.
Yeah.
And he's a determined chap, and he's proven that in the past. And he's proven doubters wrong in the past. So if he gets dropped, you know, he might just click in his head, he's got to up his own game. And you might see a change Rooney if you drop him. But at the end of the day, you don't know until you drop him, which is why I think he has to be left out from time to time.
I agree. We'll move on from England now. We'll lighten up the mood a little bit. The transfer window just closed just last week. I just wanted to run through with Aaron what he thought was the best and worst deals from the transfer window. Starting with the best, who do you think's the most value who's got the most value for money on a player this year?
Value for money is a tough one, simply because of obviously the extortionate rates that are charged to Premier League teams these days.
What we'll do then is value for money and outright best, regardless of money.
Okay. Well, I'll start with outright best, and I don't think anyone will disagree. Manchester United's transfer business this summer has been absolutely phenomenal. You know, they really, really have. Jose Mourinho came in with a plan, came in with targets, got his targets, and you've seen already how much it has improved United.
And got them early as well.
Yeah, no, I think that is really, really important. There's no panic buys. They had the time to secure the transfer they wanted. It felt like the Paul Pogba transfer dragged on and on and on, yet they still got it done with 3 weeks to go in the transfer window. That says everything about United and their efficiency in the transfer market.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, Ed Woodward has taken a lot of stick in the past. But he's a man who's turned it around this summer. No one's even mentioned his name. That is how well he's done his job this summer. But then at the same time, Manchester City have done some great business. So they've signed a lot of young players, a lot of exciting up-and-coming talent. I think with the likes of Nolito and Gundogan, they've improved the team with a little bit more experience as well. So, you know, yeah, I think credit to them. But at the end of the day, you know, it's what the Premier League is these days. It's teams who are spending money. There's loads and loads of...
That's a £5 fine. Phone going off in the podcast. That is I owe Aaron a beer. Right, okay. What were we saying?
No, I was saying that the Premier League, there's that much money that it's so... It's basically there's so many teams who are having good transfer windows, and it's only going to get more and more every year because there's more and more money being pumped into the Premier League.
On that point, are Arsenal and Arsene Wenger being left behind?
Yes, yeah, massively. I am so glad I'm not an Arsenal fan, because I'd be pulling out my hair, I'd be screaming,
or booze on the opening day.
I actually find Arsenal fans so entertaining. because it doesn't matter what they are, they're so divided in their opinions. Obviously, some of them really love Wenger, some of them really hate him. But they're also divided on like the style of play and the transfer policy. And you know, those fans go through hell. They're supporting a football club that has no ambition. From the outset, it looks like they are a football club who are not prepared to spend the money that they need to win the league.
Are they more of a business than a club? striving for success on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, they come out regularly every year when they do their accounts and everything. Wenger sits there and says, no, we need to be sensible with the money. And then the chairman and that Sir Chips Keswick every year always says that it's about being sustainable and stuff like that. Then, yeah, all right, be sustainable. But Manchester United is sustainable. They've just spent, the best part of £200 million this transfer window, and they're sustainable. Arsenal, one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the biggest global reach. They can make the money back on merchandising and all things like that. You know, they have that appeal, and they have to start spending money if they want to seriously consider winning the league.
Does Wenger think the money's coming out of his pocket? Because I don't know what it is. He just, every year he promises a big signing, and every year he seems to be after Johnny Evans for 30 million on the last day. I don't understand it.
It's a weird. I think obviously he is a shareholder in the club, which I think is a dangerous precedent. Anyway.
I do. So conflict of interest, big time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you have a stake in such a valuable football club, but something which you know is worth so much money, it's got to be in the back of your mind that you don't want it to to go to pot or anything. Whether it is truly on his mind, I don't know, but someone at the club is telling him that he can't spend the money, and whoever it is who's making that decision is making a big mistake, because at the end of the day, the fans are getting that frustrated at the moment, they will start walking away, and there's going to be backlash, and it's going to be ugly. Going to be ugly. They have to start spending money if they want to challenge for the title, which ultimately Arsenal Football Club should be doing.
Bottom line, I just want to throw this out there. My opinion for the best deal of the transfer window, we're yet to see it, and it is very early days, but when it was announced, I really liked the sound of it. Alvaro Negredo for Middlesbrough. I thought that was fantastic, because he was excellent at City for a year.
I think a lot of City fans were quite disappointed when he left City. He was a man who came in and proved he was a goal scorer, proved he was decent technically, and he's big and strong. I don't know. He can be funny. He's about 30 years old now. He's had he struggled for a couple of years.
Yeah. Was it Valencia?
Valencia. He went to, and I don't know whether it was so much himself. I don't know whether it was the club he was at, because Valencia have been in a bit of turmoil themselves. A lot of change there. He's probably relishing the chance to sign for a team like Middlesbrough, where he probably is going to play a lot of football. He's got to be considered as the regular starting striker, and he just needs to score goals again. At the end of the day, he is a natural goal scorer. He needs to score goals, and Middlesbrough have proven already that they look a decent footballing team, and they need someone to finish them off, and there's no reason why he can't be that man.
Yeah, I think he could deliver a lot of goals for Middlesbrough this season. I was really pleased for Middlesbrough when they signed him, because I always rated him, even as a United fan. I always rated Negredo, and that doesn't come often. A rating a City player is very, very begrudgingly normally, but I honestly really rate this lad, and I think he can do well for Middlesbrough. A candidate for worst deal of the transfer window, and again, this is all speculation at this point, but I was baffled by the transfer of Sissoko from Newcastle to Spurs. That was a really strange one. He's had such a poor season. I know he had a good Euros, but does that warrant £30 million?
I mean, I think it shows how valuable the international tournaments are, because he's not a £30 million footballer.
He's not.
There was a video of Mike Ashley came out yesterday. He got strip searched and got a wad of 50 quid notes in his pocket. And the first thing I thought was, oh bloody hell, there's his money from Sissoko.
The big cash.
he's done great business. Fair play to him. He sold Sissoko for £30 million, and we were laughing in our office at first when he first came out and said we want £30 million for Sissoko, or it might have been £35 million, but either way, it's the same region of fee, and we were laughing at the valuation, and he's got it.
Fair play.
At the end of the day, Sissoko is a very good footballer. There's a reason why he got into that for the French team, and there's a reason why he was playing in the final of the Euros.
Yep.
There's a reason why Arsenal wanted him last year. There's a reason why he was Newcastle's best player for some time. He is a very good footballer. But Tottenham did massively overpay.
He hasn't produced his best form, and you've got to go off form when you're paying money for a player. You have to.
Yeah.
And he's not produced in the past. He's not set the world alight for Newcastle. I can't remember him watching him on Match of the Day and thinking he's a player.
I don't think he barely got involved in any play last season. I think that was half the reason why Newcastle went down.
Yeah.
They had a lack of leaders and a lack of playmakers in Newcastle, and you know, Sissoko was partially guilty for that. But you know, maybe under Pochettino, you know, a manager who, you know, is now renowned for playing good quality, fast paced football, you know, that's what Sissoko does, you know, alongside other good players and top players like Tottenham do have. You know, he could flourish, but yeah, there's no doubt that they've paid too much. But it'll be an interesting one to watch.
So if he comes out with 20 goals this season and 10 assists and Tottenham win the league, this is going to be replayed. So I've stick my neck on the line with that one. Yeah. Something I wanted to pick up on was the loan moves of Joe Hart and Jack Wilshere. Now these two have been England. Wilshere's been in and out of the team, but Joe Hart's England's number one. City's number one up until the start of this season. First of all, there was talk of Hart being sold altogether, and then he ended up going out on loan to Torino. What do you make of him, first of all, being dropped by Guardiola, and two, actually being pushed out the door on loan?
I'll be honest, I was shocked. I didn't quite believe it when I first saw the newspaper reports suggesting that he was going to he was going to change the goalkeeper. I still didn't believe it when he started playing Willy Caballero in the first game. I still did not believe that Joe Hart was going to be leaving.
Oh, was Caballero a better option than Hart at that point?
No. I mean, Willy Caballero is a better goalkeeper than people give him credit for.
I agree.
Fair enough, but I don't see how you can say we're dropping. I mean, I don't think Pep Guardiola has actually explicitly come out and said it himself. I think this is just the reports.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to know if there's maybe something with Joe Hart in the dressing room. He's the way, you know, portrays himself, or you know, the morale with the teammates with Joe Hart. Whether there's another reason for it, but you know, if it is to do with this, you know, getting the ball on the ground, you know, I don't think Willy Caballero was streaks ahead of Joe Hart.
No.
You know, so it was certainly there was a point. Pep Guardiola did something similar when he went into Barcelona. He got rid of Deco and Ronaldinho, and
did you get rid of Valdez? Or was that after?
No, I think that was a bit after. I think Valdez played in.
He definitely played in the two finals against United.
Yeah.
Under Guardiola.
Yeah, and to be fair, after a year, he got rid of Thierry Henry as well. You know, he makes impacts. You know, he's not afraid of making a big decision, and so far for Guardiola, he hasn't ever got it wrong in his career, his big decisions. So you've got to say, if you're a City fan, you've got to back him. You've got to back his decision making.
You've got no reason not to, have you, like you say.
Yeah, I was surprised about Claudio Bravo. I mean, his statistics are fantastic. Yeah, they are, but watching him week in, week, I mean, I don't know whether this is simply because Barcelona don't concede many goals anyway. You don't look at him and think, you are in the top bracket of goalkeepers in the world.
Right. But like you say, is that because he's not tested week in, week out?
Yeah, possibly. Maybe he is in that bracket. Yeah. It's just because he's been playing in, for me, one of the greatest football teams of all time, that, you know, he's not been needed. It's a weird one. I mean, going to Torino as well, obviously, he's one of Manchester City's old coaches. I think he was like an assistant coach.
Right.
He's now a coach at Torino, hence why the link came in the first place. You know, so, but it was an interesting move. It'll be interesting to see how he does out there.
Can he win his place back when he comes back?
No.
If he comes back, or is this just a sort of a stopgap for a sale?
I think the decision's been made.
Right.
I think it's now just the time for City to move on, for Guardiola to move on, for Joe Hart to move on. You know, and just say, right, you know, pasture's new.
Where do you see him playing his football then? If it's not at Manchester City, do you think it's abroad, or do you think it's in this country?
No, I think it will be in the Premier League. I think it has to be in the Premier League. Yeah. There's not many Englishmen who do well abroad, especially goalkeepers. I don't think I can ever remember an English goalkeeper.
No. I can't remember any English players full stop. The obvious ones are Paul Gascoigne going abroad, Gary Lineker.
Yeah, you get a couple to Real Madrid as well.
But Gareth Bale.
Yeah,
you think of Bale, but there isn't too many English players or British players abroad.
Yeah, you know, especially the likes of Torino. I don't know, Dennis Law went there. Yeah. I mean, God, how many years ago was that?
50-odd years ago.
I know, exactly. It's a weird one. But what Torino will give him is, you know, a club without major expectations. They're not expected to go down. They're not expected to challenge for the title in Italy. You know, it's a club where he can just get comfortable, play football, get comfortable, enjoy playing again.
Is it a bit of a shop window for him as well? Torino will be tested defensively.
Yeah, definitely. It's his chance to really prove his worth to top teams around the world. There's no reason why. I mean, just throwing initial names out there, the likes of Arsenal, obviously Petr Cech is getting a little bit older.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they won't be looking for a new goalkeeper in time to come. Same with Liverpool. You know, even the likes of Everton, who obviously have a bit of investment now. You know, they're the sorts of clubs which, you know, I think should be looking at Joe Hart, and the clubs which I think Joe Hart will, in his mind, think that, you know, he needs to be playing at. He's a world-class goalkeeper at the end of the day. Just a bit of an unfortunate situation, and Guardiola made up his mind, and only time will tell whether it will work.
Yeah, completely agree. Just brushing on Jack Wilshere, as I mentioned earlier. I think Wilshere was the less surprising one because he's been in and out the Arsenal team with injuries and so forth. Do you think the move to Bournemouth for 12 months can benefit his career and he can get back in the Arsenal team? Because this is a different loan move than Joe Hart's, very much.
Yeah, I think it's one where it's a tough one because he's going to play more football.
Yeah.
But every time he has played more football in his career, he's just got injured again.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to be really, really careful with, you know, his training.
Well, somebody made a point of why he gets injured is because he overruns the ball. And just overruns the ball and rushes into tackles, and heavy tackles come on him, and he picks up knocks and injuries.
I think that's a lot of his game. Anyway, you know, he likes to run with the ball. He likes to get on it. He likes to take people on. He likes tackling. He likes getting in tackles. And technically, he's a superb footballer, you know. He has it all. For me, when he's fully fit, he's England's best central midfielder. The thing is, though, you just cannot rely on him being fit for three consecutive weeks. Bournemouth fans are in for a frustrating season with him because you can bet your life if he's got a little niggle, someone will be on the phone from Arsenal saying, you cannot be playing him.
Yeah.
Because they'll still be paying, 50% of his wages, you'd imagine.
Yeah. I saw an interesting picture, actually, on Twitter. You probably saw it, did the rounds, of Jack Wilshere arriving for his medical in an ambulance. It wasn't obviously real, but the Blues and Twos flashing down the motorway. Well, that's the type of player he is, as you say, very injury prone. But it'd be interesting to see how he copes with that move, mentally as much as anything, being dropped from the England team.
That's another pipe for me.
That's another beer that I owe Aaron. I'm going to be well out of pocket by the time this finishes. it'd be interesting to see how Wilshere handles this mentally more than the physical side of it, because I'm not sure about this, but Wilshere might have thought he was untouchable in that Arsenal team. He'd always walk back into it. He's a bit of a poster boy for Arsenal.
Yeah. No, I was quite, in a weird way, pleased for Wenger. The fact that he's put his foot down, you know, he said, listen, you might be one of our best players, but prove that you're one of our best players. And he's gone and given him game time that he needed. And you know, I think it's a good decision for all parties, isn't it, at the end of the day? Bournemouth are another team who will relish, you know, a star player, but they'll suit Wilshere's style of play, and Wilshere will suit theirs. You know, I think he made the right decision by picking them. I really do.
I agree with that. Just moving on quickly, I texted Aaron a few days ago about the topics of this podcast, and I threw in a little bit about Paul Scholes and what he said about the non-league pyramid and the Premier League just this week just gone. And the reason I did that is because I saw he had a fair bit to say about it on Twitter. we saw Paul Scholes last week at the Curzon Ashton versus Salford City game. He's always at the Salford games. He's got, obviously, you've seen the Class of 92 documentaries, and he's got a vested interest in the club being an owner. First of all, he said he prefers non-league football to Premier League football right now. He says the English game isn't as good as people making out, which I can't really disagree with. He prefers watching the non-league game because it's just more entertaining. He's not saying the quality is better, but the Premier League is vastly overrated in his opinion. What do you make of those comments?
It's an interesting one. I mean, before I go on what seems like a little bit wrong, I just want to say, you know, Salford City, I like them.
Right.
I really do. I've got a lot of time for all the people at the club. I think the management duo, in Jono and Bernard, lovely lads, down to earth, determined and great at what they do. I actually, in a weird way, support what the, you know, the class of 92 are doing. All right, it's not nice. Obviously, I come from a non-league background. I follow non-league clubs, and every now and again, you do get these teams who come in and throw a load of money at it, and you get a little wound up at them because you think, we've not got a chance now because all these are throwing money at it. And that's kind of what Salford have done, obviously, with a big name billing and the BBC endorsement and and all that. But Scholes' comments, interestingly, you know, he made a lot of good points about why non-league is more enjoyable, about the fact that, you know, the convenience and all this. But the point of his article was, look at the money in the Premier League, look at the cash cows, look at the fact that everything's a business. At the end of the day, if that's his thoughts, why is he pumping, or why is he with a group who are pumping so much money into Salford, who are looking to get up the levels? And at the end of the day, they're going to become such a big team that they're looking to build, you know, their own stadium. You know, obviously they've got their own ground already, but they're going to turn it into from a ground to a stadium.
Yeah.
They're going to look to make money as a business. They have to do that if it's going to be sustainable. You know, and this is exactly what Paul Scholes is arguing about.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt that the class of 92 are in it because they love it. I genuinely think they're in it because they enjoy winning, they enjoy football.
Yeah, they don't need the money. But if they never invest in Salford City, they wouldn't ever have to work another day in their lives, any of them.
Yeah.
So
I would also say I'm not 100% sure how much money they are actually putting in. Obviously, they are. They own 50% of
the other consortium.
The other 50% is Peter Lim, the owner of Valencia,
right?
Who owns Salford, and I'm quite sure he's the one who's when they need money, he's the one pumping it in. But Scholes is obviously a backer of Salford, a backer of the system. I just kind of feel like it was his comments were a little contradictory. To the Salford model. It's a weird one. I'm looking forward to it. I think the book's actually come out today, I think, which the comments were made.
Cheap plug, Class of 92 book in all good bookstores.
Yeah, well, it better be because I'm going to have to go and find it. So, I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm sure there'll be many more comments about the comparisons of between Premier League football and non-league football and...
Do you think their investment in a team like Salford City has actually drawn a lot more people, not just to Salford, but to non-league football in general? They have made it a little bit more romantic to go to a non-league game.
They definitely have. I speak to loads of people who mention Salford to me. When I say, obviously for people who are listening who don't know who I am, I follow Curzon and Ashton Football Club in the Conference North, the same league as Salford. Previously, I'd say people, I follow Curzon Ashton. Now I say I follow Curzon Ashton, they go, oh yeah, from Salford's league, you know,
by association.
Yeah, exactly. There's an awareness there,
right,
which is only a good thing for non-league football. People are more aware that the level's there, and by having the endorsement of big name players like that, you know, some of the most popular players in history, it's only a good thing for non-league, and hopefully more people will try their local football team rather than just Salford. I mean, if they want to go and watch Salford, I've got no gripes with that. I understand why it's romantic. I understand why people would want to follow it. But, you know, I think there has been a bit of a knock-on effect. I think people have found non-league enjoyable. And I think if they continue the way they're going, it looks like there might be another series of the TV programme.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason why...
It's not going to be a detriment to non-league football, this programme.
No. At the end of the day, it's only going to get more people watching it, whether it... Well, majority might only be at Salford. Majority might be following Salford, but it's more people following non-league football.
Exactly.
More people aware of the level. More people that might just go to a ground which they've never gone to, and you never know, they might like it. And it's the support and the backing that non-league football has needed, and to be honest, it's probably deserved recently.
Yep. So sticking with Paul Scholes, I don't know how true this is, but just take it for what it is. It's funny. I saw on Facebook Paul Scholes' face next to a quote. So we all know not to take these as gospel, but just hear me out, this is a funny one. He says, the Manchester Derby is just another game, it's not that big a game. Manchester United are still by far the biggest club in Manchester. The second biggest club in Manchester is the Hacienda, and that's been shut for 20 years. So that really, really tickled me. Shots were fired, and it's a nice little segue into the next and the final topic of this conversation, which is the Manchester derby, which is coming up this Saturday, 12:30 kickoff. Both teams coming into this match in very good form. Both won 3 out of 3. Both spent decent money in the summer. Both had new managers. In this conversation, you've got a United fan in myself and a City fan in Aaron. We've got very balanced sides. We'll start off with the City fan. How do you see the match going? Are you excited for it, for one? And which way do you see it going, for two?
I can't wait. 7-0 City.
Yeah, very objective opinion there from the Manchester City fan.
No, it's the most anticipated derby, I think, since the one in 2012.
For the league,
what, like 3 games before the end of the season?
Yeah.
I don't think, ask any City fan or even United fan around, I mean, United fans especially, United fans are going to be absolutely buzzing for this. It's the first time in maybe 5 years, which they're going into a derby and genuinely believing we're going to beat City. And it feels like it's a big game. Feels like it is the top two.
It is, because in my opinion, these two are going to be wrestling out for the league. I don't think it's going to come down to any other team.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea are showing that they might get close, but at the end of the day, they've only played, I think, Watford and Burnley.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I don't think any of the big teams have played a decent fixture just as of yet. But
yeah,
I think from what we've seen, you know, United have won pretty convincingly the first couple of games. They nicked through against Hull, but City have been convincing. Both of these teams believe they can beat the other going into Saturday's game.
Yeah. I'm a City fan, and I fully believe that City, playing the way that they have been playing, will beat United. But I'm sure that you as a United fan are thinking, if we play the way we've been playing, we will win. And it's two very, very good sides. Two sides still in transition. Got to remember that. You know, there's not, these are not the finished articles.
There's new blood in both sides.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a fascinating game of football. I think City will have a lot more possession. I think I think Guardiola will make sure his team have the ball.
Is the Mourinho bus going to be out?
Yeah.
The pumped up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I genuinely think City will need an early goal.
Yeah, I think you could be right.
I think the longer the City don't score, the tighter United will be at the back. And the more
0-0 actually written on this one.
Yeah, I don't think it will have the fireworks between Guardiola and Mourinho that, you know, the world is maybe wanting.
Yeah.
I think the first time they ever met as a management team, it was just management opponents. It was just a handshake, and you know, they got on with it. It took 5-6 meetings before we got to the quite aggressive,
the heat that they have now.
Yeah, it almost became a bit like a bit of theatre between the two back in Spain. But it was very entertaining. But I think we are some way off getting that again.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it will be more about the teams on the pitch,
which is how it should be anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of a pantomime sometimes when the managers are at each other's throat. And
yeah, I mean, but at the same time, it's nice when your manager shows a bit of passion.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I know, with City, you would have never ever got Manuel Pellegrini showing much aggression. You know, you will get that with Guardiola. You will get that with Mourinho, and it should be. It will be entertaining between the two.
I'm sure.
It's so unpredictable. Which makes it really, really exciting.
Well, I texted a friend of mine and one of my best mates. I've been texting him before every sort of City United game, and every time I've texted him, in the past 5 years, like Aaron said, I've gone 3-0 defeat. Because that's the way I've honestly thought of going into a game against City, whether it's Old Trafford or the Etihad. I've always fancied City to turn us over. They've always had our number. But this time, like Aaron says, it is different, because United have come off the back of a great transfer window, as we've discussed. They're in good form, they've got good players, they're at home. There's no reason why United can't go and win this game, and I've actually backed them to win 2-1. So rare confidence in going into Manchester derby from me in particular, but I'm sure as United fans as a whole. So it'll be an interesting game for sure.
Weren't United fans quite confident going into that game, which eventually finished 6-1 though?
When was that?
That was 2011. Yeah. It will have been. I
don't remember that game. That's weird. That.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was.
I seem to have just etched that one from my memory. Yeah,
no, I've been enjoying Sky Sports Football Gold over the past week, on repeat.
Well, I'll tell you why the reason we lost that game. I've never had a chance to air this opinion, but the reason we lost that game 6-1, and you'll laugh now, is that 3-0 down, Darren Fletcher scored.
And it was the fact that we all went, oh, here we go. We're going to do it again. We're coming back. It's Fergie time.
It was.
We're going to come back and draw 3-3. And we flooded forward. We left nobody at the back. And City went and scored 6. And we've never forgotten it since. So that's the reason we lost 6-1. And I stand by that reasoning.
Well, thank you, Darren Fletcher.
So, if take note, United. If we are 3-0 down with 10 minutes to go and we score, take the 3-1. Take the 3-1. We're happy with 3-1. Take the 3-1. Right, okay. Just finally, Aaron, I just want to give you the opportunity to sort of plug what you do and where people can find you on social media and things like that. Just give us a bit of background about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, I am a writer for Mirror Football. I write news, features, basically whatever I'm told to write is the basic gist of it. So you can catch me, or my articles, down the Mirror Football Twitter feed, or you can follow me personally at Aaron Flan on Twitter. I'm always up for football discussions. You know, if people want to tweet me anything, you know, I reply to pretty much everybody, providing I'm not too busy or I've not got an editor looking over my shoulder telling me to do some work. So no, feel free to get in touch. I'm always happy to discuss anything.
Fantastic, Aaron, thanks for your time, mate. I really appreciate it. This has been the first ever episode of Touchline. This is going to be a fortnightly podcast that me and Aaron are going to bring to you every 2 weeks. This is for zipsportsmedia.com, and we thank you for tuning in this week. Be sure to tune in at the next episode in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much.